Okay, my name's Chuck Pluth, and I've been talking about geology this week. Remember the first session, we talked about making observations, putting those observations into some sort of history for this area, like the pages of a book. And then, since all of the pages for a book of Earth history aren't here, we have to combine them with pages that we don't have, that other places have, and we can figure out sort of what happened in the past. And we do that, it happens over a long period of time. And then yesterday we talked about the geologic time scale, where the names came from, but also the length of that book, how long it is. And it's 4.5 billion years old. And we said that geologists get really casual about 10 million years. We think that's almost like yesterday. 2 million years is, you know. And so, so today what we'd like to do is use kind of what we've talked about before, but if you weren't in those sessions, I'll remind you that you can ask questions. Just blurt them out. Don't hold back. The only bad question is one that didn't get asked. So what we're going to do today is talk about sort of global tectonics first, how the tectonics on the surface of the globe work, kind of historically how we developed that idea and how it works. And then at the end, we'll come to Holden. So we're going to start with the big picture and come to the small one today. Whoop, looks like we're going to get... let's see here.
Just wake it up by touching your pad.
There you go. Isn't that pretty, Glenna?
Gorgeous.
That's the golf course.
Yeah. Everybody notices
just outside Denver.
These rocks. But Rick immediately picked out the golf course.
I can smell the golf course.
Sand traps.
Yeah.
My ball can smell the sand traps.
Let's see, it changed the resolution here. In the early part of the 1900s, well, let's go back in front of that. The ancient Chinese figured out that if you used a particular rock, that it would point toward north. It was magnetic. They didn't actually have that concept, but they realized that you could use it to steer with. And so we've known about magnetism on Earth for a long time. In the early 1900s, some Japanese folks were looking at magnetism in the rocks in a stack of volcanic rocks in Japan. And what they noticed was sometimes they were magnetized to the north, we always think they are today. And sometimes north was actually pointing south. That the magnetic field of the Earth broke flips every so often. And that was astonishing, but we didn't know what to do with it. But later on, let's see if this works. Later on, after World War II, I mentioned this earlier that we put out seismometers because we were worried about the Russians testing nuclear bombs. And the Russians couldn't afford very many nuclear bombs, but they found another astonishing thing, and that is earthquakes form in zones. Now, sometimes the zones are pretty broad, but quite often, especially around the world, they are quite narrow, and although you can't see it on this map so well, maybe here, sometime in the past they had realized that there were mountain chains on the bottom of the ocean that were 20,000 feet high. And so they knew that there was topography on the oceans. And they found that some of those earthquakes happened right along the tops of those mountain chains. And they said, what is this? What have we got here? And these are actually color-coded, these earthquake sites. This is for 10 years, between 1990 and 2000. So that these orange ones are the shallowest, the green ones are the intermediate depth, and the blue ones are the deepest. So what this shows is a seismic zone that dips something like this, with the orange here, the green here, and the blue down here. And to back up a little bit farther than that, in the early part of the 1900s, there was a Danish meteorologist, a guy named Wegener, who looked at a variety of evidence, things like glaciers that were not there anymore, but seemed to have come from the west to the east in South America, and a variety of other things. He also noted, of course, even going back to Francis Bacon back in early England, that South America looks like it fits into Africa. And so Wegener proposed this idea that he called continental drift, in which the continents on the Earth's surface floated on some kind of dense substrate, and they drifted around, they sort of floated around. Mice.
Big ones.
The earthquakes.
Earthquakes.
So learned geologists and geophysicists rejected that. The guy wasn't a geologist, so how could he know anything? And Wegener wrote a book that Origin of Continents and Oceans, in which he lined out all of his evidence, and it was pretty much forgot until this sort of data started coming in. Wegener, ironically, died on Greenland. He froze to death on Greenland doing a weather survey before the Second World War. This data came available after the Second World War and was part of the Cold War, actually. We were worried about what the Russians were doing, and so we collected this kind of data. But what you can see, even from the back of the room, is that the earthquakes line up, and there are great expanses where there aren't very many earthquakes, and then there are narrow zones, one going right through New Zealand, and in the last week or so, New Zealand had a big earthquake, a little greater than 8 on the magnitude scale. And so that would be another point right in here. And so people started to puzzle about that. Why all those earthquakes were right along those zones, and especially why they were either at these mountain chains, like the East Pacific Rise, which goes up here, or the deepest trenches. This is the Marianas Trench right here. And so what was that trying to tell us? Well, they also ran magnetometers around behind ships, because if you're looking for a Russian submarine, which is magnetic, it's a lot better if you have a background on which you can look for this anomaly, this magnetic anomaly. And so the Navy started running these ship tracks with a magnetometer behind them. And what they were trying to do was just plot out the magnetism on the ocean floor so that if a Russian submarine was there, we'd know where it was. And what they found was, again, astonishing, that in some places, what they found was that the data sort of lined up like this, with highs and lows, high magnetism, low magnetism. And they came to realize that sometimes this was sort of constructive interference, if you want to think about it, or addition to the present-day magnetic field. And the lows were when the magnetic field was pointing the other way. And some very clever geologists figured out that that the seafloor was actually spreading away from these mid-ocean ridges. So it was the youngest right here, and it acted like a tape recorder. It was actually recording the magnetic field of the Earth as it spread apart. And so this would be the youngest here, and the next youngest here would have a reverse pole, and then this one would have a modern-day pole, north pointing to north, the compass pointing to north, here pointing to south, there pointing. And so this is a tape recorder then of the magnetic field of the Earth with time. And they call this seafloor spreading. So we've gone from continental drift to seafloor spreading. And when we put that together, well, here are the magnetic stripes off of Washington and Oregon, all the way down to Cape Mendocino. But here are the magnetic stripes. And in fact, the whole ocean basin is striped like that. And so they realized that what this was telling us was the spreading of the ocean basins and the movement of the plates on the Earth's surface. And so then it became plate tectonics. One of the reasons they didn't believe Wegener, this guy, besides the fact that he was a meteorologist, how could he know anything about that, was that his idea was that these continents were just sort of sailing through the mantle. And so how could that work? Could it work? And they had a lot of important geologists who had a stake in the idea that the continents were fixed, which made it even harder because, of course, they controlled most of the geologic thought. So what they realized was that these spreading centers shown by these dark lines are spreading like this, and that's a tape recording of what's going on these plates. Now, it's not a tape recording what's going on here because something else is happening along here. That's one of those inclined seismic zones like this that I showed you a little bit earlier. And so this idea of plate tectonics developed that the Earth's surface is made up of tectonic plates, some big, some little. Some have just continental crust in it, which is lighter. Remember we talked about that yesterday, that this is mostly quartz and feldspar, two different light minerals. And this has a lot more iron and magnesium in it, so this is heavier, denser than this. And these plates then move around on the sphere, sort of in relation to each other. It's relative motion. So it's not necessarily all of the plates are going west or north, but they're moving relative to one another. And then some really smart geologists figured out that about 350 years ago, a mathematician named Euler, E-U-L-E-R, had developed the mathematics for rotation of plates on a sphere. And so that then allowed us to get quite quantitative about how these plates are moving. And so we developed this idea of plate tectonics. Crust is created at the mid-ocean ridges and spreads away. These are topographically high, and the material spreads away almost by gravity, and that's what keeps the process going. That crust is created here, and then it spreads away. And like we talked about maybe yesterday, if you do that, if you create crust without destroying it somewhere, the Earth has to get bigger. You know, the surface area of the globe has to get bigger. Well, that we don't think that's happening, although I mentioned that that was an idea that was seriously considered for a little while, that maybe it was getting bigger. We just hadn't been smart enough to measure it. But what we found was that the crust is actually being destroyed at what we call subduction zones. So these are spreading centers, and this is subduction of oceanic crust under continental crust or other crust. Sometimes it's under other oceanic crust. And that's where the crust is being destroyed, and it's being recycled back into the mantle. And so, so the result of that is that this is a zero-sum game. The Earth is not expanding. The amount of crust is being created is the same amount that's being destroyed. Now, it's not all being created at the same rate. Things like the East Pacific Rise, where the Galapagos are very fast-spreading centers. And so, relative to North America, that is moving away from North America just because it's spreading and spreading and spreading, and so it's moving away. And I think I said, touched this while I was trying to get it out of my pocket. I think I said that this has water in it, and under higher pressure and temperature, the minerals in this oceanic crust change to a more stable form. They're the ones that are present here in this upper part near the ocean floor are not stable when you bury them to 100 kilometers, about 60 miles. And at 175 kilometers, they go through a change to another mineral form that can't include the water. So it's a dehydration reaction. And I said that one of the ways that you melt rocks is to add water to them, and they melt. And so that melt then comes up through the crust, the upper part of the crust, and forms volcanoes, shown here by this dramatic. In some cases, even in the continental crust, you'll have rift zones where this part of the continental crust is spreading away from that one. The Afar Triangle in Africa, or the Rio Grande Rift, if you've ever visited Albuquerque, is right in the middle of one of these big crustal rift zones. Material sort of on this plate, either volcanoes, like this is supposed to be, I think, like Hawaii. Hawaii stands out in the middle of the oceanic crust and actually is one of the biggest mountains in the world. It deforms the crust, bows it down, that's what's being shown here. And as this rides across, as it is, it's heading toward the Aleutians now, or Kamchatka, it will eventually enter this subduction zone. But this is lighter than this now. So it will be sort of smushed onto that piece right there. And that's exactly what's happened through time in Washington. Pieces have come in on oceanic crust, either continental fragments, pieces that have been rifted away and carried across the ocean, in this case this way, and they entered this subduction zone, but they can't subduct, they can't get down there, they're too light. So it's like the beach ball, you know, pushing it underwater. And so they become part of this continental plate right here. The other thing that's going on is that as this oceanic plate is being subducted, it's scraping off the sediment that it carries into it. So we have this zone, we call it an accretionary wedge. It's sediment and sometimes oceanic crust that is being pushed back this way just because it's being scraped off as this goes down. That would be the island of Barbados in the Caribbean is on one of these. And so these are the deepest trenches in the world. Marianas is on this subduction zone. Let me back up here. Marianas is right here. And all of these are places where the crust is being destroyed. It's being subducted. And there are volcanic arcs, Japan, Philippines, Indonesia, and so on. And so here's Hawaii. This part of the Pacific is sort of heading this way. So So eventually it'll get to this subduction zone up here and become part of Kamchatka or the Russian. When you get Hawaii to Russia.
Not within our lifetime.
No, no, I don't think you have to worry about it right now. I wouldn't sell my condo if you had. Okay. So in the ocean terrains like Japan and the Philippines and Indonesia, it's oceanic crust subducting under oceanic crust. And the same process produces big volcanoes and produces island arcs. That's what Japan and the Philippines are. And so sometimes these arcs stand on continents and sometimes they stand on the ocean, out in the ocean. That's the Cascades, of course. They're standing right on the edge of the North American continent.
So is Hawaii on an arc or a...
No, that's out here in the middle. It's thought that there's a hot spot. There's a thermal plume. For some reason, some heat flow in the mantle that it's like holding a match under a piece of paper and then moving the piece of paper over it. So there are holes burning through the piece of paper. Uh-huh. Well, there is a string of volcanoes coming up. The current one wouldn't be the Big Island, it'd be Maui. And as these get older, they cool, they're becoming more dense, and so they subside. And so if you go to Hawaii, the Big Island, the big guys, are all down here in the southeast, and the islands get smaller and lower as you go to the... And in fact, if you go out this way, they're submerged. There are sea mounts underneath there that were at one time right over this so-called hotspot. And they've been, they've cooled and submerged below sea level. So that diagram that I just showed is sort of a cross-section across here. The ridge is down here. There's also one out in the middle of the Atlantic here. I didn't realize when I picked this that the Atlantic got slighted here. So the Pacific is getting smaller. North America and South America are moving relative this way. The Pacific is moving relatively this way, and Asia is, it's moving relatively this way, but not very fast. It's sort of the backstop for the whole thing. Papua New Guinea is being pushed back up onto Australia. The Indian plate is subducting underneath the Indonesian arc. And this is not called the Pacific Plate, but for our purposes, we'll just call this the Pacific Plate. Another piece of the Pacific Plate is being subducted underneath South America. So that's the big volcanoes in the Andes. Now, there are other plate boundaries besides these ones that where they're pulling apart, they're actually moving apart. Or ones where they're coming down and being subducted. And those are these faults we call transform faults that are where the plates are moving sideways past each other. So we'll come to some of those in a few minutes, and they play a role in what's here at Holden, because Holden has pieces of different terrains or different flotsam and jetsam, if you want to think about that, that have been assembled, but they're continental fragments. So we call these things collectively suspect terrains. Their geopolitics are suspect. We don't know exactly where they came from in some cases. Some cases we do. But I'll get back to that. So here is a map. And you can pick out North America and South America. With the ages of the crust, the red is youngest, the green, yellow, and green are older and older, and finally you get to this blue that's the oldest crust. No crust that we know of is older than Jurassic, about 150 million years. Why? The rest is all gone back into the mantle, and it's been recycled. And so that's the oldest crust that's still left, and it's only left in a few spots over here in the Western Pacific, and a little bit along the margins here. But the rest of that ocean crust is all fairly young. And so compared to the continents, it's really young. And so this is a map of the geologic plates on the surface of the earth. Bounded, you might remember, or you might be able to pick up, by those big earthquake zones. The earthquakes are all where the plates are moving past each other, one way or another, either down below, or spreading, or past each other this way. And so the arrows show you convergence or the relative motion is between North America and the Pacific. And you can see that there's some lateral motion between those. That's the San Andreas Fault I'm going to get to in a minute. Up here in the Aleutians, the Pacific is going down underneath the North American plate, which includes a little bit of eastern Siberia. And that's why you have volcanoes starting with Katmai, here's the Japanese, and here's the Filipino arc. Here's the Marianas Trench. And to give you some perspective about sort of the topography on Earth, we sit here and we look at these mountains and we go, man, it's really high. But if you viewed at the sort of scale of the Earth, the Marianas Trench is about 35,000 feet deep below sea level, so 7 miles among friends. And the highest mountain, of course, is over here in Himalaya, and it's about 30,000 feet above sea level. So that's about 6 miles. That's about the distance from here to Lucerne. That distance is the complete topography. If you could move the Mount Everest right next to the Marianas Trench, that's the topography you have. So we live on a cue ball. And it's a water droplet, actually, because tomorrow I'm going to tell you that a mile of ice will deform the crust. And it doesn't take a lot to make the crust deform, subside. It's like a water droplet, only a little bit longer time scale. So these are the plates, the tectonic plates. Here's North America. We're right now on the western part of the North American plate, the vast Pacific plate. And notice that here it's spreading, here it's closing, here it's closing, here it's closing, here it's closing, and really over here it's closing. So the Pacific was once much bigger and is getting smaller because the plates are moving across. Now, how fast do they move? I mean, you know, I'd like to take a look at them. They move about as generally, they have different speeds, of course, but they move generally about as fast as your thumbnail grows. So you think about how many times you put your thumbnail in a year, and it's a couple of inches a year. And we calculated that based on the age of the oceanic crust, like I said earlier, because we can dredge up samples, we can analyze them like we were talking about yesterday using the radiogenic isotopes. And so we calculated that, but now with GPS we can actually measure it. And so they measure with GPS in a few places like Iceland. They measure the precisely the speed at which the Atlantic Ocean is spreading. And of course, if that's spreading somewhere else, it's got to be going away, right? You know, you're creating crust here, you've got to be taking it away somewhere else. Okay, so those are the plates. Africa sits almost by itself out here, and notice that it's pretty much shortening or convergence all around Africa. And the thought is that Africa is moving, but not very fast. And also, these hot spots like Hawaii, we were just talking about Hawaii, there are other places that we think there are hot spots around the world. And the idea was that those were a fixed frame of reference. Turns out they're not so fixed as we thought, but they still move much slower than the plates. And so we can still use those stripes on the ocean floor and the age of the ocean floor to tell how fast this plate is moving away from this plate, or that plate. And here there's a Caribbean plate. This is Haiti, right there. And that they had a big strike-slip earthquake there not too long ago. They also have convergence across here between, and it's both convergence and lateral motion across the Caribbean South America plate, and it goes right through Trinidad, and they have earthquakes in Trinidad, northern Venezuela. Let's see where else. Well, of course, out here they have big earthquakes. This is the convergence between India and Asia. And when you get there, you get a big mountain range. Let's see, I think it's the next one. No, I'll get to it. You get a big mountain range, the Himalayas. The Himalayas are places where the continental plates are running into other continental plates, and nobody wants to go down. They're both really light. So what happens is that they just compress, and there's some duplication of that light plate. That's why it stands up. Tibetan Plateau stands up high because it has twice as much thickness as the continental, the light continents. Okay.
Question?
Yeah, sure.
What accounted for the magnetic poles to flip-flop?
That is an independent question from plate tectonics, and I don't know that we know the answer to that. The magnetic field of the Earth is caused by a torus in the core, and I don't know. We thought for a while that it was rhythmic, that it was had a time period, you know, where it was like two waves put on top of the other, so one like this, and one like that. Turns out that's not right at all, and so I don't think we know why it does that. It was a big concern, though. It's not trivial. Because, if you remember that first diagram, this is what keeps the cosmic rays off of us, right? And the radiation from the Earth, or from the Sun, and elsewhere in space, is sort of held at bay by these magnetic lines of flux. And so people started to think, well, when this thing switches from north to south, does the light go away? And of course they wondered, if that's the case, first of all, they wondered, what's going to happen to us? but really, they started thinking about, well, maybe that causes the extinctions, that all of a sudden this intense cosmic rays come in and everybody gets fried. Turns out that's not right. It does change in about 10,000 years. It takes a while to change. And but it does not die away completely. And so we don't think right now that we're going to be bombarded by intense radiation when that goes away.
Would there be evidence geologically that that did happen? Or like if the solar wind blew a lot of the atmosphere off? Or?
No, it doesn't look like any of that happens when this thing changes. And so I don't think we know why it doesn't allow these cosmic rays in, or why it doesn't blow the solar wind doesn't just blow all the atmosphere off. but it doesn't. And some people think, and you know, we're talking about really minute changes here and really delicate instruments that are noticing it. Some people think that it's changing right now. That we can see the present day Earth's magnetic field decreasing a little bit. And it's within the uncertainty of the instrumentation, so people argue about that, but it looks like it's weakening a little bit, and it may be a periodic weakening, it may be one of these switches going back. It takes about 5 or 10,000 years, which again is geologically an instant in time. Okay, whoop. Sorry, my trigger. Okay, let's talk about these different types of oceanic edges here. I'm sorry, plate edges. And the first one I said was where material was being pulled apart, the ocean plates were being pulled apart. That usually doesn't happen in continents. And what happens in continents is like the Red Sea, that it splits apart far enough that finally you start to get oceanic crust in the middle. And then that's how continents split apart. One of the places, though, that we can actually go and see this mid-ocean ridge, because it comes to the surface, is Iceland. And it's right on this mid-ocean ridge, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and it's right there. And so that's where we go and study what happens at mid-oceanic ridges as far as the volcanism and the tectonic, and also the rates. That's one of the places where you can set out a GPS network, and you can actually measure the spreading of the plates right there, directly. I put this in as a picture of the volcano because it was this volcano that erupted and caused me to spend 2 weeks in England rather than 2 days that I was planning on. I got stuck behind the volcano when they closed down the airports in London, and the rules were that you couldn't fly through an ash cloud. Well, what they were thinking about was Mount St. Helens of Pinatubo. You couldn't see the ash at all in London, and so it was not clear to anybody that this ash cloud that was supposed to be over England was going to do any harm. And then British Airways started sending up planes and included the CEO of British Airways, who laid on the planes and the test planes. And they came back and, of course, tore the engines apart and demonstrated to the British government that it wasn't going to do any harm. And so they opened back up the airways. And it gets even better than that, because my daughter was going to get married that weekend in San Francisco. And so my younger daughter and I were figuring out how we were going to do a Skype. You know? And I was going to be there, and then they were going to sit at the computer with my picture on it, facing the altar. You
know? Walking her down the aisle.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, well, you could put me in on the top of a cardboard cutout, but I wanted to be a little thinner, you know. I wanted to have, like, airbrush. But, and so there was much tearing of hair and gnashing of teeth about this volcano. I was in London and they were preparing for the wedding in San Francisco. I made it by about 2 hours. I was there, I was completely fogged with jet lag, but I was there. Yeah. So I'm in the pictures. They didn't have to like push me in with the Photoshop. Okay, the second kind is where plates move past each other laterally. And these are called transform faults. This motion is called strike slip because this is the strike of that fault, the orientation of that fault, and the plates are moving laterally past each other. And this, of course, is the San Andreas Fault in Western California. And it is a transform in that it links two other kinds of plate boundaries. In the Gulf of California here, there are short spreading segments. So the San Andreas system links a spreading center here, all the way along here, and back out to here. So this is the spreading center here on the Juan de Fuca plate, and this is here in the Gulf of California. There's been about 350 kilometers of motion on this, and we can get into some of the earthquake hazards, but there is historic earthquake data, 1906, 1857, where there are huge earthquakes on this, where the plates are just having a hard time sliding past each other. It comes out to sea again at Cape Mendocino, in northern California, and then it becomes it transforms and links to a spreading center up here where the crust is pulling apart again, and it's being subducted underneath northwest part of the U.S. underneath us, and that's where the volcanoes start again. That's Mount Lassen, and the one that's just north of that, the big cone,
Shasta.
Crater Lake. What is it?
Oh, that's thinking Shasta.
Shasta. Shasta was the one I was thinking of.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I had a senior moment. Crater Lake, Mount Baker, Mount Hood, if you live in Portland, Mount St. Helens, if you live anywhere, you've just heard of Mount St. Helens. And those volcanoes are coming up through the Earth's crust because of that subduction zone. And as that grew from here on northward, you can watch the volcanoes here go out like light bulbs as this triple junction, this sort of spot right here, moved up the coast, because you need subduction to cause volcanoes, and the subduction was shut off along here. And so Mount Lassen now is the farthest south of the Cascades that stands inboard of the subduction zone. So that's why Mount Lassen is there. And what's going to happen in the future? This is going to move farther northward. This whole plate's going to move farther northward, and Lassen will shut off. It will not be active anymore and be eroded away. This is what the San Andreas looks like going across the Carrizo Plain. If I'm standing in your way, you can tell me. This is what the San Andreas looks like going across the Carrizo Plain in Southern California. And it's a fairly evident landform. You can see it from the space shuttle. Not a problem. You can probably see it from the moon, actually. That's true. Okay. So some places oceanic crust is going under the continent, and in some places the subduction zone sits somewhere offshore, and there are island arcs along the margin of the continent that are not related directly to the continent, but to this piece of oceanic crust. And that's what happens underneath the present-day Cascades. The present-day Cascades are sitting on oceanic terrains that have been accreted now onto Western Washington. And so these pieces of flotsam and jetsam have all been smushed onto the continent. And it's just over here. As a matter of fact, I'll show you that in a minute. And then continent-continent collision, we've already talked about Mount Everest and the Himalaya, where a continental plate, the Indian plate, is running into the Eurasian plate, and nobody can go down. So what you have is a huge uplift. Okay, let's move then to closer to home, using the ideas that we've just talked about to interpret Northwest Washington. So this map is a map of terrains of Northwest Washington. And let's see, Seattle would be down here. Here's Tehachapi, so we're sort of by the T in mountains, I guess. It's not shown on here. Alden Village didn't make this map. But there are huge faults, like the Fraser River Straight Creek Fault, and one closer to us, the Eniac Fault, that separate pieces of crust that were not joined at one time, but are now next to each other, and didn't have much to do with North America, but now are part of North America. They've been accreted onto North America. The importance of this big Straight Creek Fraser River Fault is that this is continental material, so it's fragments of continental crust, came from somewhere. We think actually most of this came from elsewhere along the margin in North America. It's sort of been shuffled up, just like what's happening now. Look, what's happening now with Baja California, LA, which we knew was suspect. Even San Francisco, which I'm telling you is suspect. All of that is moving sort of, well, not so slowly, it's about as fast as fingernails. But that's moving northward and will eventually be accreted farther north in Alaska. Well, that's exactly what's happened here. Although the story is complicated, I've made it sound like it's simple to unravel, and it's not. But these are continental fragments of various things. And these are oceanic pieces that have been accreted. So this fault, the Fraser River Straight Creek Fault, separates those two. So as pieces of continent, sometimes the little pieces were collided and amalgamated, we call it, before they were accreted onto North America. Other times the fragment was all by itself and it just came in and was accreted onto North America. So we are in the Chelan Mountain terrain, which is a metamorphic terrain. The protoliths, the pant rock of these metamorphic rocks, were about Permian age, so about 300 million years or so, a little less than that, maybe 230 million, 220 million. And so this was metamorphosed, and some of it is ocean floor, some of it is intrusives, some of it are continental fragments. But mostly continental fragments, that's what we said, it's over here, it's pretty continental. And then intruded by a variety of fluids and igneous rocks. And the fluids are important because that's what carried the ore bodies that they're mowing just up the hill. We're just up this afternoon to look at what they're going to do to clean that up. So these pieces are all flotsam and jetsam. We're moving up the coast, if you want to think about it like that, and then accreted onto this area, probably in Cretaceous time, 150 million years ago, and then intruded by plutons, these big igneous bodies, and also fluids moved through them that replaced some of the rock with ore-bearing material. And then in Eocene time, about 50 million years ago, by this big pluton, and I forgot to bring in that little piece that I've been carrying around all the time, that little black and white one that I passed around, that's sitting out there on the porch, but we can take a look at it later if you're interested. Out here, this is a stack of oceanic plates, one on top of another. So it's like they shingled in like pancakes. We have pancakes in the morning. If we're going to have pancakes tomorrow, we can all gather around and I'll show you what the Puget Sound and the offshore islands of western Washington look like. They look like pancakes of oceanic crust sort of shingled up there. The top one is a Fidalgo, which is, I don't know, it's one of these right over here. It's where Anacortes is. Anacortes sits on that. And then the outer islands are lower plates. Okay, so let's look at the geologic map. In the time we have left, Let's see, well, we'll have to come back for topographic maps later. But this is a splash of color on the sheet. And topography, you can see Lake Chelan right here, the serpentine thing. And you can see part of the Fraser River Straight Creek Fault right here. And it comes up down here at about Cleon. Is about where it comes through. So if you notice, and I didn't even know what I was necessarily looking at that time, when I drove over here, you can see a change in the rocks and the topography of the mountains right there. Because these rocks, all these oceanic rocks, form different kinds of mountains, a little bit different than the sandstones and the metamorphic rocks that we see over here. And so this is the Eniac Fault, and here's Holden right there. And so it's a piece of continental fragment, metamorphosed probably in Jurassic time. And so to read a geologic map, all it is positions on the map. So someone went out, and everywhere they stood, they identified the rock that they were standing on and the age of that rock based on fossils. We don't have any fossils here, but age dates that we could get from radiometric isotopes. And so then each rock unit has its own separate color. So a geologist knowing what that color means knows that whole area right there, if he went across the river, lake, he knows that he or she would be standing on a certain rock type. And it's the patterns of these then that we try to put together to figure out the geologic history. Okay, so this is the same map. This is the Eniac Fault. Here's the Chelan terrain right here. And you can kind of get an idea. It's this yellow and brown stuff, different than the blues here or the blues there. And it's that wedge, which is this wedge right here. Okay? And this is the, I don't know, this might be the Mattel terrain. This is the Skagit terrain, which is a big high grade and nice, huh?
Oh, the Skagit comes way over onto this side.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. And Western Washington.
And these are the oceanic terrains right here. Oceanic rocks, mostly basalts, dense volcanoes, things like that. Okay, I gotta get going here because we only have 10 minutes to talk about Holden. This is the Railroad Valley. And so we are in this. This is the Eniac Fault, right over here to our west. We notice that it's been intruded by this orange rock, which is an igneous rock, and you see the fault goes right up, stops there, and then I might have cut it off, but it starts up again over here. So that pluton, that igneous rock, has come right up and cut the fault plane. And it's not faulted, so whatever age this rock is, that faulting was done by then. See how the logic behind that? This isn't faulted, it intruded this fault. So if this isn't deformed, all the deformation on this fault was done by that, or else it would cut that. And so these brown, Holden is about right here, sorry. And so it's this brown unit here that is the metamorphic rocks that contain ore body. And this is a closer up map of Holden. Right there, sorry, can't see so well, standing over here from the side. And then, of course, this is Holden on Google Earth. If you're not familiar with Google Earth, it's really fun. But if you gotta have time, because it's a rabbit hole. You go into Google Earth, and it takes you, I could just play with Google Earth all day. But here's Holden, and here's Holden, and what we're gonna see in the next image, I hope it's good enough quality, that there are stripes in here. And so this brown area that's mapped here on this geologic map, these are faults. some of them we can make sense out of, and some, I don't know what they're trying to tell me, but anyway, these light brown units are the metamorphic rocks that are up here in the mountains and contain the ore body. And, let's see here. Here, maybe you can see the stripes in here. Yeah. So Holden is just up to the north, and you can see the layering in those metamorphic rocks. Now, one of these actually had the fluids pass through it, and the copper and the silver and the gold and the zinc was deposited there. Remember we said that gold was a fugitive ion. Copper and silver are not so fugitive. Copper forms lots of things, lots of complexes and other but nevertheless, that fluid came through and was in one of these layers right here. And the layers, if we get a good enough picture, maybe if you're interested, stay and look at Google Earth, are dipping, and you can actually see that. Let's see, look across, excuse me, this way. But if you look at Buckskin Mountain, I think it is, you can see the layers on the skyline are sort of dipping off to the, that'll be the east, right?
West.
Yeah.
It's
one of those layers then that the fluids came through and they left the ore body. Here's some pictures. That's the mill. We saw it today. It doesn't look like that. And I'm amazed, since 1957, that mill has taken a hit. It doesn't look very good at all. Here's some guy down there. There's an ore chute, and they're putting it in the ore car, and they're going to take it out. What they did, and I didn't realize this until we were on our hike today, was they just, what Holden did, he was looking for color. So a different color is what prospectors look for, and they actually talk about seeing color, and it's just the alteration. I forgot to bring them in, but there's a couple of orange rocks sitting out here on the porch that I picked up that are the color that he saw, this orange iron stain, and that usually means alteration of the rocks and could mean ore. Well, he was smart enough to realize that, and so he dug back in there and he found up there by Honeymoon Heights, he found what he thought was pretty good ore. Well, it's dipping that way, so rather than go in from here, that's why they dug the portal. The drift went in to get at that stuff down below the surface, a little farther. Rather than dig down this way, they went that way, which is easier. And that's why they got that's why they attacked it from the portal, not from Honeymoon Heights. Here's what, these are pictures from off the internet, Wikipedia or someplace I got these today. But here's the copper mineralization, and if Micah was here, I have a little piece that I picked up for him to put in his bucket. You remember last night he was at his bucket. And so that's the copper, and then this is the orange stuff that you see pieces of rock around here. That's the alteration, but that's part of that ore body, and so it's the alteration of the rock that changes the color, which was Holden saw, which led him to the discovery of this mine, and it was the biggest gold and copper mine in Washington for a long time, 20 years.
So did you get these pictures, did you say off the internet?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it says this mine is located across Railroad Creek from Holden Village.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have to cross the creek there on the bridge to get to the mine. And so somebody put them on in Wikipedia, I think, is probably where these came from. But I don't actually remember. I was humming around this afternoon trying to find some pictures of the mine.
Well, you wrote this script, didn't you?
No, actually, I captured that off the internet as well.
That's what amazed me.
So I, because I, you know, yeah, it's the first time I've ever been here, so I couldn't begin to think
oh,
I could
yes,
remember that.
Right.
I can't
yeah.
remember where my pen went. So that is then the story of how plate tectonics has influenced the ore body in Holden Village. Tomorrow, we have another part of that story, and that's the glaciers.